gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Awesome Mania. It's me, it's Mike, and I am being joined by the returning Fatimus Prime, Mr. Matt Carroll. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy. It's good to be back. My hiatus went well. Like I said, good to be back.
Now, right here is when I would be introducing your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor, but unfortunately, Ben is not going to be on the podcast for the remainder of 2023, at the advice of his doctors, due to damaged vocal cords. So that's one of the reasons why Matt is actually back, because Ben is unable to do the podcast for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, just a quick kind of touch on that. I was going to. I had talked to Mike and Ben back in July, and I had said after my hiatus that I wanted to really scale back my involvement with the podcast to maybe like the big four shows. It was originally going to be I was ending my time at the podcast, but then I thought about it and, maybe take on more of a part-time role after the end of the year. So in 2024, I'll be back. In a part-time capacity.
Yeah. So obviously our best wishes go out to Ben. We hope we hope those vocal cords get well rested, get well healed.
He is the voice of the show, so he is kind of needed.
He is the undisputed champion of Awesome Mania.
Exactly.
And, you know, I'm just the beautiful looking schmuck who just has to host the thing, you know? But with that, we are in the month. Well, technically, we're in the month of September. It's September 2nd, but we're recording our August episode. And we're going to get to SummerSlam 1998. That's the paper we're going to do. We're going to do a rundown of ECW Heatwave and WCW Road Wild. But first, we're going to talk about some news and notes. First, we're going to start off with the passing of Terry Funk. Matt, I'm going to let you take away on Terry Funk because I know you grew up watching Terry.
Yeah, man, Terry Funk was one of the if there is a Mount Rushmore of professional wrestlers, I do feel like Terry Funk belongs on that in that vein. Or if there's a top 10 greatest of all time, he should arguably be on almost every like person from. Who grew up watching Terry Funk in the 80s and 90s list. Because, I mean, you know, he was in the NWA, he battled Flair, he battled Dusty. I mean, he was one of Dusty's big foes. You know, I mean, him and the Von Erichs were pretty much, it was the Funks and Von Erichs that pretty much ran Texas. You know what I mean? It was, you can't tell the story of professional wrestling without Terry Funk. You can't say that about a lot of wrestlers. Terry Funk was one of the most important wrestlers in the history of the business. And he was also in the 80s considered strong enough, you know, he was good enough heel to be thrown out there for programs with Hogan. I mean, I think it's one of the first few Saturday Night's main events. He's main eventing with Hogan, and not everybody got to main event with Hogan. Hogan was they were very picky about who main evented with Hogan, and he and Funk worked a program together in the 80s. That's a pretty big, that's a pretty big accolade right there. I mean, I know a lot of people dislike Hogan and think that Hogan was overrated, but in the 80s, if you got to work with Hogan, you were seen as a formidable opponent. So
I think in fairness, I think the reason people don't like Hogan isn't because of what he was in the 80s. I think it's because of what he is today.
Well, yes, that's true. But there still is, like, you know, people don't know how to separate the man from the work. So that's why I was clarifying that, in my opinion, anyway. But yeah, man, Terry Funk is a huge loss for the wrestling community. I know he was battling with health issues for a long, long time. But, that's a big one. The programs he had with Flair and Dusty in the 80s were insane. His work as, I mean, he was the king of the death match. You know what I mean? And I'm not a huge fan of death matches, but, For him to get those accolades in Japan like that, be as popular as he was in Japan, says a lot about how he was as a worker. And then, honestly, I think that his work as Chainsaw Charlie was hilarious. And
Despite the
that's kind
jokes
of
that we
what
make about Chainsaw Charlie.
what's that?
Despite the jokes that we make about Chainsaw Charlie.
Yeah, but actually, what it was apparently Chain. There was a barber from the story that I've heard about how that character came to be. Funk asked to be Chainsaw Charlie when WWE called him after his retirement match about coming back. He said he would do it, but he wanted to be called Chainsaw Charlie. And Chainsaw Charlie was a barber from his hometown that all the kids dubbed Chainsaw Charlie. So it was an homage to, I guess, an old friend of his from back in the day.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Also, unfortunately, the very next day after Terry Funk passed away, we had the untimely passing of one Bray Wyatt, Wyndham Rotunda. That one, hits a little harder at home because Bray was 36 years old. I'm 36. I'll be 37 literally in a month. So, that kind of hits a little harder in that regards, of how young he is. And the reason we found, and what we found out is that the reason he disappeared right before WrestleMania is because he ended up catching COVID and it exacerbated heart issues for him. And he ended up having a heart attack that, unfortunately had him pass away. So that was definitely a blow in the wrestling community. And the last time he was on, and Matt, last time he was on Monday Night Raw, the Undertaker literally passed the torch to him. His last match was, at the Royal Rumble in that Mountain Dew Pitch Black out match. So we didn't really get to see this full vision of this new version of Bray Wyatt that we were going to see, and it's a shame, really, that we've
Yeah.
lost Bray the way we did.
Yeah. It was, it is very sad. And I still maintain that, and I don't think there's any disagreement from anybody that watched wrestling in the last decade that Bray Wyatt was one of the best characters in the last 20 years of WWE. I mean, in every iteration, there were guys that some of their evolutions didn't hit well. Like I know a lot of people don't like the American Badass Undertaker, Ben being one of them. I like the American Badass, but
I started with American Badass
different
Undertaker.
strokes for different folks. But I know that one didn't hit very well with a lot of people. And then versions of Kane didn't hit well. Some guys just didn't do it. But almost everything that Bray did, once he was given the creative freedom to be essentially the vision of what Wyndham Rotunda wanted to be, he hit, and he was so good. When the music would hit, the Fireflies came out. It was there was I hadn't been to I had only been to one or two events that Bray was at, and I remember when the Fireflies came out, there was nothing like it in wrestling at the time. And in all the wrestling events I've been to, other than maybe an Undertaker entrance, that was the coolest entrance I've seen.
Yeah,
Yeah, man.
definitely being part of a Firefly entrance, because I think I've only been to one that involved Bray Wyatt, and I think that was the MSG show that I went to with Ben Pedrod and Howie Noel.
Yeah, I think
And
he was.
I think that was the only one. And like seeing Madison Square Garden live in person lit up with the Fireflies, that's something special.
Yeah, and honestly, like all week long, I've just found myself going, he's got the whole world in his hands. Because, it's so funny because when I was a kid, we would sing that in Sunday church school. He's got the whole, and then you see this Bray Wyatt
And then you get cult
character
leader, and then you get cult leader Bray.
singing it, and then you get the Fiend singing version singing it towards the end there. it was just it was so cool. Everything about Bray was awesome. I loved my favorite version of Bray, I think, is everybody's least version. I liked the cult leader Bray.
Actually, no, everyone, cult leader Bray is probably the most over version because the reason is that the Fiend, the problem with the there and Ben noted this about the Fiend a lot. The problem with the Fiend was is that you can't legitimately beat him. Like, remember that Hell in a Cell match with Seth Rollins where it ended in like a no contest or something like that, because it's like he was hitting him with like the steel chairs and all this other stuff and the sledgehammer, and like the Fiend still wouldn't go down and stuff like that, and then like the apparently the only person who was allowed to beat the Fiend was Goldberg. Yeah, so you have this issue where you have a guy who should have never have had the Universal title because of the way of how unbeatable this character is and the way this character was set up. And that's probably why, like, people love the Fiend, people love the eeriness, the whole basis of it. But when it came to logic of how you legitimately beat him, how is Goldberg able to beat him, but Seth Rollins with steel chairs, the steel steps, sledgehammers, and all this other stuff can't beat him? And that's kind of
The only really, in like terms of wrestling characters, I feel like could have beaten the Fiend would have been a Prime Kane or a Prime Undertaker, something else that goes to the supernatural like the Fiend did, or Matt Hardy, when he was doing his
Woke Matt Hardy, or Woken, not woke,
Woken Matt
Woken.
Hardy, yeah.
Yeah, because he wasn't broken in WWE. He was Woken.
Yeah.
But
So,
like, I love that team of Matt and Bray together. That was hilarious. I remember the day. I think it was like the SmackDown the day after Bray passed away. They did the tribute, and I remember somebody shared the video, and it was like Jeff Hardy, Finn Balor, and Seth Rollins walking on Monday Night Raw, like backstage, getting ready to go out for like a 6-man tag. And then they run in, like they see Jeff look over to the side, and he sees Matt and Bray Wyatt, and they start talking, and Matt is Brother Nero in the entire conversation. And it's like, and then like the conversation's over, Jeff goes back to like Seth and Finn, and they kind of go like, "What was that about?" And Jeff's just like, "I don't know." It was just another day in the world of Jeff Hardy, Matt, and Bray. It was so unique. It was so like I still laugh watching that video, like every time that little segment. So,
So one of the things I think that while I loved the most creative Bray Wyatt was the Funhouse, what it was called, Happy Time Funhouse or whatever,
Firefly Funhouse.
Firefly Funhouse, that's what it was called, the Firefly Funhouse. Because now I'm not talking about his iteration as the Fiend when he wrestled. I'm just talking about the vignettes for the Firefly Funhouse were the most creative, because each of those little puppets, in my opinion, were his different personality or different parts of his personality. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, I love
The rabbit represented one part of his personality. The other puppets all represented a part of Wyndham, not Bray, but Wyndham, I think. And it was kind of cool, in my opinion, the way that was working out. You know what I mean?
and not only that, but like that run with the Firefly Funhouse match with John Cena. Because of the pandemic, that they're doing a little bit more cinematic matches. That for Cena said that's still one of his best matches. That's one of the feuds that he's still very proud of because, of the creativity that Bray brought into his feuds and stuff like that. But we got to move on. We got one more bit of news that we got to talk about, and that was about All In this past weekend. Well, technically, if you're listening to this, this past weekend would be All Out, but, you know. But in London, we had an incident that took place backstage involving CM Punk and Jack Perry. And so here's the thing. I want to relay this out there first, because I've been seeing it a lot. People need to start being careful who they pay attention to when they're getting the reports from. I'm going to be very brutally honest. Since CM Punk and the All Out situation last year, Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer have not spoken positively about CM Punk, period. Not once. That's problematic when it comes to reporting news. If you obviously have a bias against somebody, why should I pay attention to what you are saying? But then on let me get the full point out. On the other side of the coin, you have like Nicholas Houseman of House of Wrestling, who is based in Chicago and always tells the side of CM Punk. Nothing against Nicholas, but you're the only one that's really sharing CM Punk's side of the story. So while there is truths in both sides of the stories, rely on people like a Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful Select or PW Torch or these other media outlets, because they're the ones that are digging deep from both sides to try to find out what the middle ground of the truth is. Because I'm going to be honest, there was a report about how, and it was from Alvarez, where he was like, oh, CM Punk wanted to fight Miro, which then an hour later he had to pull it back and go, oh, well, apparently it was a joke. And we'll get to that in a moment. So I want to start this off by saying, be careful who you pay attention to. If you don't like CM Punk, yeah, you're probably going to be more drawn to an Alvarez or Meltzer, because they're always going to report the negative side of CM Punk. They're never going to report the positive side of him. And if you don't like, the Elite, you're always going to go to the sources that don't like the Elite and are always going to report negatively about the Elite and stuff like that. So it's like, be careful of who you actually follow for these reports, especially when it comes to incidents like this, which now will bring me to the actual incident itself. Unless you want to chime in super quick, Matt.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm not a big CM Punk fan, but I do think that there is a lot of somebody's always trying to catch on, or somebody's always
there's always someone trying to drag someone down.
Drag him specifically down. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's the internet warriors are just waiting for CM Punk to screw up in the littlest way so people can go, oh, see, I told you so. He's an asshole. Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And it's like, I said, I'm not a big fan of the man, but it is getting old, everybody just trying to drag him into the dirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So going into All In, we're going to rewind to like Collision a few weeks prior. Jack Perry wanted to do a segment where he used real glass. CM Punk, who is the locker room leader of Collision, said, no, we don't do that here. If you want to do that, do it on Dynamite. Because let's be honest, using real glass is really freaking stupid. Look what happened to Goldberg in WCW when he smashed his arm through the glass. He was out for like, what, almost a year because of that? And then Undertaker got injured in the Boneyard match because they thought it was rigged glass and it ended up being real glass, and he ended up getting injured too. Real glass is no joke. Going into All In, Perry was in a 0 hour match against Hook for the FTW title and a hardcore match, to which then in the match, Perry did like a suplex or something to Hook onto the windshield of the car, and then said to the camera, real glass, cry me a river. Note, Perry did get hurt. He ended up cutting his arm on the glass of the windshield of the car. So just to throw that out there, he did actually get hurt. He did get an actual laceration on his arm, if you actually pay attention to the match and stuff like that, to that spot and moving forward. That obviously caused a backstage interaction between Punk and Perry. However, as more reports have come in up to this point, it should be noted that CM Punk and other AEW talent had travel issues once they landed in London. They were supposed to have rides and transportation provided to them once they landed, and a lot of the wrestlers did not have transportation provided for them. They all had to either get their own Ubers or take other transit methods to get to their hotels and stuff like that, which obviously and rightfully irritated CM Punk and probably irritated a few other members of the locker room. And so while that match is happening, Punk is ripping Tony Khan a new one, probably about the transportation issues and stuff like that, because keep in mind, Punk versus Samoa Joe is the first match on the card for All In. So they're probably already in gorilla position because they're the first match and they're getting ready to go out, you know, once the show opens up. So there is already an altercation between Tony Khan and Punk, most likely over the transportation issues, which Punk's not fighting that on his behalf, but on the locker room's behalf, because yeah, somebody should speak up about that because that's a legitimate problem. Then the Perry thing happens, and when Perry comes to the back, they have an altercation, and I'm not going to go over all the reports that were said because we're still hearing like 3-4 different versions of the story, but there was an altercation. Samoa Joe stepped in and held back Punk, you know, and got Punk back into the frame of mind to do their match because there was worry that they may have to move a couple matches around. And now as of right now, both Perry and Punk are suspended. And there's an investigation going on. But here's the kicker. You ready for this one, Matt?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's on video because Wembley Stadium has cameras everywhere for security purposes. So they have the entire incident on video, probably on multiple video cameras from when it happened. So, and it happened right in front of Tony Khan. If it happened in front of Tony Khan, there shouldn't be an investigation. I think this is one of the biggest problems right here that Tony Khan has. Tony Khan doesn't have the guts to just say, okay, you guys are suspended for now, but when you come back, we're doing a storyline with you guys and we're going to settle this shit in the ring. There's no need. The moment that he goes, oh, well, it's under investigation, and he allows lawyers to get involved and all this other stuff, it creates more of a mess for you. Like, we've heard Booker T chime in on this problem, you know, and we've heard Eric Bischoff, who is a darling to this show. You know, we love Eric Bischoff on this show. Even Eric Bischoff's like, stop doing investigations. Just settle this shit in the ring, you know? Get the lawyers out of this. You know, and that's one of the biggest problems that's going on with AEW. So, yeah, what are your thoughts, Matt? You know, so
I mean, honestly, like, here's my thing, right? Like, Eric is 100% right. Like, and I've kind of felt like this for a while. Like, I am not an AEW. I am not the biggest AEW fan. Like, I like some of the stuff that they've done, but like, you're watching this, you hear stories come out like this, and it's a lot of you know, just it reminds me of WCW a lot in that, you know,
and that was the point Eric was bringing up. You know, that, like, that was the point Eric brought up.
Like, for example, you hear stories like this a lot less in WWE than you hear in in AEW, right? Like, I feel like there's always something, some kind of negative news cycle going on about both companies, obviously, because there's always going to be. But, like, I don't know. It just feels like sometimes AEW is amateur hour.
Yeah, and well, not only that, but I think this really all started back when, and even before Punk was there with the stuff with Sammy Guevara, when he was getting into it with Eddie Kingston and getting into it with Andrade El Idolo. If you have
Well, and
Guevara
here's the thing.
instigating this stuff, why aren't you doing something about it?
So here's part of the problem, right? And I'm not trying to speak ill of anyone, but the problem is it's like almost as if it's almost like I'm trying to say this as sensitively as possible. Tony Khan is a trust fund baby who his daddy bought him a business and he's running it, but doesn't, I feel like, doesn't really know how to run a business. You know what I mean? Like, his dad is the businessman. I feel like Tony Khan is just out there to have fun with his friends and not run a wrestling company. You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's part, and that's kind of the thing, and like that's I think why we really take to heart what Eric Bischoff says, because he sees what he did in WCW, where he was one of the boys, and he saw how that was the ultimate demise of WCW, because you had all these guys who had so much control over what they could do, and Eric was just going to let it happen. And it's kind of like almost in a way the same way in AEW with Tony Khan. And I want to say this too. I am a CM Punk fan. Okay? I am. I'm not going to apologize for it. But at least I'm willing to go, hey, you know what? I think I agree with why CM Punk maybe did what he did, but I don't agree with the way he did it. That's the difference. Because like I'm not going to apologize for Punk. I'm going to say, yeah, he does bear responsibility for some of the stuff that he's done, but I'm still a fan of him. I like watching him wrestle. I love his promos and stuff like that. That's me. But
I mean,
I will admit, a lot of the reports though on both sides of the coin are saying brunt of the of the responsibility does fall on Jack Perry on this, because he should have known better than to try to, poke the bear, if
well, and
one
also,
said.
but here's also the thing, right? Like, when he said, no, you can't use real glass, you need to use sugar glass, that's not really Punk being a dick. That's him saying to a younger guy who hasn't been in the business as long as CM Punk and going, listen, this is safer, this is the way it needs to be. It sounds to me like Perry got a wild hair up his ass and is like, this guy has a reputation. He told me no, he's being a dick. It sounds to me more like Jack Perry was being a petulant child in the whole
Well,
situation.
the funny thing is that when the reports initially came out about the whole glass thing, Perry was unhappy about how it got into the media, which was like an added thing for Perry to be pissed off about, which is like boo fucking who,
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's
So
just.
I'm not a CM Punk defender normally, but in this one, I think that he might be in the right.
Well, he may be. I mean, here's the thing. He's in the right for telling someone, no, don't do that. But I think he's also in the wrong, and maybe the way he confronted Perry backstage. And maybe he was wrong in the way he confronted Tony Khan backstage. And the way, so it's like, is he right for confronting it and trying to take care of the issue? Yes. Is he most likely wrong on how he went about doing it? Probably yes.
Yeah.
And that's the bigger point right there. Like again, I'm not defending CM Punk fully, but I'm also trying to look at it from CM Punk's point of view at the same time too.
The real person who is to blame for all of this is Tony Khan,
Yeah,
because
if
he's
Tony doesn't
clearly
take care of it.
exactly. He's clearly made it known that if you fight in his locker room,
He ain't
you
gonna
might
do
get.
shit about it.
Exactly. So that's who's to blame. And I feel like not enough people are are calling out Tony Khan, other than, EB for this,
Yeah. Well, I think also Booker T has called him out. Austin has openly said, Stone Cold Steve Austin has spoken out about it on his podcast too. And I want to end it on this note. When we hear about this backstage stuff, we always hear like in WWE, like when guys got into a fight, Vince would make them settle it in the fucking ring. He would make money out of it. Great example, Matt Hardy and Edge, when the whole Lita thing happened. Another great example, and I brought up Booker T, but Booker T and Batista had a fight backstage, and they ended up turning it into a feud over the world heavyweight title for a while. And I think it was when Booker T was doing the whole King Booker thing. So it's like, okay, we had an issue.
There you go, is what I was talking about earlier, is Tony Khan is just hanging out with his boys. Vince is a businessman and a ruthless businessman, and was like, "Hey, you two want to do this? We're all going to make money off of it."
Exactly. And that's the thing. Booker, and not only that, but after the whole feud was over on television and stuff like that, they had a better respect for each other. Because Booker even said after that feud on television, that him and Batista had a better respect for each other. And that's how you help improve your business. But anyways, we're gonna move on. We can talk about the whole all-in situation all we want, but we're not going to. We are going over the August pay-per-views, and we are going to have a minor change to how we do things. So real quick, I'm going to go over the ECW Heatwave 1998 card real quick, and then Matt is going to go over the WCW Road Wild 98 card on that end. So starting off of ECW Heatwave 98, you had a dark match of the hardcore chair swinging freaks of Balls Mahoney and Axel Rotten defeating the FBI of Little Guido and Tracy Smothers. You had Just Incredible of Jason, Nicole Bass, and Chastity defeating Jerry Lynn as the opening match on the card or the pay-per-view. Then you had Chris Candido with Tammy Lynn Sitch defeating Lance Storm. Masato Tanaka defeating Mike Awesome. Rob Van Dam and Sabu with Bill Alfonso defeating Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki. For the ECW to defend their ECW World Tag Team Championships. You had Taz defeating Bam Bam Bigelow by submission in a Falls Count Anywhere match for the FTW Heavyweight title. And then in the main event, you had Tommy Dreamer, the Sandman, and Spike Dudley defeating the Dudleys of Bubba Ray Dudley, D-Von, and Big Dick, who had Joel Gertner, Sign Guy Dudley, and Jeff Jones in a street fight. So that was ECW Heatwave 98. Matt, why don't you tell everyone do a quick rundown of the card for Road Wild 1998 for WCW.
Okay, this is a card, boy. Woo! We've got in the first match, Ming defeating the Barbarian with Jimmy Hart in a singles match in 4 minutes and 48 seconds. I'll bet that was a doozy. Match number two, we have the Public Enemy, Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge, defeating the Dancing Fools of Disco Inferno and Alex Wright in a tag team match that went 15 minutes and 27 seconds, which
It's
those are
the
four good
second longest
workers.
match on the card.
Yeah, those are four good workers, but that's a little long for those guys. Then we have Harry Saturn defeating Canyon and Raven in a Raven's Rules match in match three. That match was 12 minutes and 26 seconds. Match number four, which might be the match of the card, possibly. We have Rey Mysterio defeating Psychosis in a singles match to determine the number one contender for the cruiserweight strap. That match went 13:38. Then we have a television title match: Stevie Ray versus Chavo Guerrero Jr. in a singles match. So Stevie Ray defeats Chavo Guerrero Jr. in a singles match for the television title.
In a whopping 2 minutes and 38 seconds.
38 seconds. Then, this is a real doozy. We get Steve Mongo McMichael defeating Bryan Adams, aka Crush, the greatest wrestler of all time, with Vincent, aka Virgil, piece of shit, in a singles match in 6 minutes and 32 seconds. Then we get our longest match of the night, which was probably, I take it back, was probably the match of the night. It was Juventud Guerrera versus Chris Jericho in a match for the Cruiserweight Championship with Dean Malenko as the special guest referee, and Juventud defeated Chris Jericho to win the Cruiserweight title in 16 minutes and 24 seconds. I'll bet that was a hell of a match, to be honest with you.
Oh yeah.
And then we have the NWO Invitation 10-Man Battle Royal. Invitational Battle Royal, won by Goldberg. Now, here were your participants in the Battle Royal. Now, this Battle Royal went just under 8 minutes. We have Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Conan, Kurt Hennig, Sting and Norton, Lex Luger the Giant, and Goldberg. Now, here are our eliminations. Scott Hall was eliminated by Goldberg going over the top rope via an outsider's edge being countered into a back body drop in 1 minute, 24 seconds. Then Kevin Nash eliminates himself to fight Scott Hall. Conan was eliminated by Goldberg after a spear, a top
Pretty
rope
much they're
spear.
all thrown over the top rope except for the last one.
Kurt Hennig eliminated by Goldberg, spear off the top rope. Goldberg, or sorry, Sting and Scott Norton thrown over the top rope by guess who?
Goldberg.
Goldberg. The only other non-Goldberg elimination was Lex Luger, eliminated by the Giant after a spear from guess who? Goldberg. Then the Giant was eliminated by pinfall, however the hell that works in a battle royal match, after a jackhammer to the Giant, resulting in Goldberg winning. What the shit? And then this last match of the pay-per-view is the absolute most what the fuck match I've ever heard. Diamond Dallas Page and Jay Leno with Kevin Eubanks defeated Hollywood Hogan and Eric Bischoff with the Disciple and Miss Elizabeth in 14 minutes and 31 seconds. That match was officially 14 minutes and 31 seconds too fucking long. What the shit?
The greatest one, the arm, like the arm twist by Jay Leno on Hogan. Oh my God. So with that was WCW Road Wild or whatever the hell it was called. I already closed the page down because I was following along. But now we're going to WWF SummerSlam 1998. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to go over the entire card except for two matches because for whatever reason, Peacock will not allow screen sharing anymore for Discord or Zoom. So we are going to be watching the last two matches because we were able to find the full length matches on Dailymotion and YouTube. So we will be watching those matches. And those matches, that way you can actually pull them up right now, is Triple H versus The Rock SummerSlam 8/30/98, which is on Dailymotion. That one is a total of 33 minutes and 54 seconds long, so we do recommend that you go on to Dailymotion now and look up Triple H versus The Rock SummerSlam 8/30/98 with a runtime of 33:54, and then on to YouTube, look for a full match. And actually, this is from the WWE's YouTube page: Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Undertaker WWE title match SummerSlam 98, which runs for a runtime of 23 minutes and 6 seconds. So while you're searching for those, I'm going to go down the SummerSlam card. First off, we have three heat matches. First, you had Too Much, Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor defeating LOD 2000 of Animal and Hawk with draws in tag team action. Then you had Gangrel defeating Dustin Runnels in singles competition. And the final match on Heat was the Disciples of the Apocalypse, 8-Ball and Skull with Paul Ellering defeating Bradshaw and Vader in tag team action. Then to open up SummerSlam, you had D'Lo Brown defeating Val Venis by disqualification to retain the European Championship. Then you had the Oddities of Giant Silva, Golga, and Kurrigan with Luna Vachon, Shaggy 2 Dope, and Violent J. That is a hell of a group. right there. Defeating.
No, it's all point for the oddities. I mean,
Oh, yeah, exactly. Defeating Kai and Tayo, Dick Togo, Menz Tioa, Sho Funaki, and Taka Michinoku with Yamaguchi-san in a handicap
you
match.
said it wrong. It's Dick to go.
Oh, Dick Togo.
So, like you know, a woman in an adult
Yeah,
film orders Dick to go.
we get it, we get it. And then in our next match, we had X-Pac with Howard Finkel defeat Jeff Jarrett with Dennis Knight and Mark Canterbury in a hair versus hair match. Then we had Edge and Sable defeating Jacqueline and Mark Miro in mixed tag team action. And I believe this was actually Edge's WWE debut. I'd have to
Yeah, I
double
think
check
you're
that
right.
because it is the 25-year anniversary of Edge in WWE. I just pulled up his thing, so we'll look that up in a moment. Then you had Ken Shamrock defeating Owen Hart with Dan Severn by submission in a Lion's Den match. Then you had the New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg defeat Mankind in a Falls Count Anywhere handicap match for the WWF Tag Team Championships. So the New Age Outlaws would become tag team champions. And then that brings us to where we are now of Triple H versus The Rock and Stone, which is a ladder match for the Intercontinental title, and Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Undertaker in a singles match for the WWF Championship. Now, we're still going to let people get a little bit of time to pull up Daily Motion and YouTube to grab those matches. So we're going to pull up the thing on Edge real quick.
This does not seem like a horrible 1998 card. A lot of 98s put on some good stuff, and this is actually not a bad, I don't feel like a bad card. Like, it's not a great card, but it's not a bad
Oh,
card.
exactly. And for the record, this match on SummerSlam is his first pay-per-view match in WWE for
Oh,
Edge.
okay.
And he served as Sable's mystery partner. So he was like actually a mystery partner for Sable. Let's see here. Edge's first televised match was actually on June 16th, which aired on June 28th against Jose Estrada Jr. So that was the first one that ended prematurely by countout when Edge performed a somersault senton from the ring to the outside, legitimately injuring Estrada's neck. Ooh, probably didn't mean to do that, but shit. Yeah, because whenever I think of Edge, I always think of him as a very safe wrestler. I mean, but accidents do happen, as we always know. So yeah, that is that. I'm going to lower the volume so I don't have it blasting on my end. So you're not going to hear too much of this on your end, Matt, so I do apologize.
Oh, well.
But that's not the point. The point is for us to kind of watch it and talk about it.
Yep.
So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've gone for your ads and stuff like that, because we are now going to start in 3, 2, 1. And of course, for Rock Triple H, we actually get to see the DX band performing. It's actually kind of funny watching the.
Who was the DX band? I don't remember a lot about them back then. Were they even famous before this, or was this like
Well, they
their
performed
kind
at
of?
the, they also performed at WrestleMania early in the year too.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm saying, like, were they like a name band, or were they just kind of like you know what I mean? Were they a popular band at the time, or
No,
like
so
throughout
they're
the
also referred to as the Chris Warren Band. We've actually talked about this before on the show. But Chris Warren has always been known as like the lead singer. They were just a group that performed entrances for many of the stars of the show of professional wrestling over the years. Like they did My Time for Triple H and Break It Down for DX and stuff like that. He also did some stuff in TNA.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So, it should be noted, I actually do find it funny how like when Chris Warren walks through the curtain, it's like, "Are you ready?" And then the band is just kind of like walking out to the ring too with him. I do like this like little concert in the ring right now, though. And that was, I think that was just Hunter saying degeneration. And now you got Chris Warren on Hunter's shoulders, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
He almost drops him. And then Triple H destroys the drum set. Oh, now we're getting the Rock's music for the first time, I think, on a pay-per-view. Because it's doing the Rock says, the Rock says. But this is still obviously Nation of Domination Rock, though. Or the Nation now. They're not known as Nation Domination anymore.
Yeah, the nation.
They should really put the Nation of Domination into the Hall of Fame.
I agree. You know what I was thinking about the other day? A group that I would like to see go into the WWE Hall of Fame, because while they might not have all been the best wrestlers, they did bring us some great talent. They should put the original cast of Tough Enough in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Ooh, that would be nice.
You know, I mean, because shoot, I think if Maven had been able to stay healthy, he might have been able to do something later on. You know, for a while there, Nydia was huge. Chris Nowitzki, if he had stayed healthy, I mean, they were pushing him to the moon at points. You know, I mean, what was Josh Matthews, who was a big time announcer in both WWE and TNA.
You know,
So, I mean, they brought up.
I want to see something
What?
real quick. I don't think Nowinski won the first year. I
No,
don't
he
think.
didn't. It was Maven and Nydia won the first year, but Nowitzki did get a contract to go to WWE.
Yeah, you're right. Right, that's right. Because Nowinski was runner up to Maven. I couldn't remember if he was first year or not.
Yeah, no, he was first year. He was runner up to Maven. Yeah.
Well, see, here's the thing. That first year, Tough Enough. First off, the trainers were top notch. You had Al Snow, Jacqueline Taz, and Tori.
Yep.
So you had great trainers. Al Snow, I'd like to see put in the Hall of Fame for
Oh
his
yeah.
contributions to wrestling and stuff.
Oh,
But yeah, let's see here.
100%.
You had Nowinski, Josh Matthews, Maven, Nydia, and I think that was it
For the
for
first
first
cast, yeah.
season. Yeah. And then for season two, oh, that's right. They replaced Tori and Jacqueline, but they brought in Hardcore Holly, Ivory, and Chavo Guerrero to be
Yep.
trainers along with Al Snow and Taz.
That was a great, yeah. I watched all the MTV seasons of Tough Enough. Season two was great.
Yeah, and
Now,
season two gave us the winners of Jackie Gata, who became Miss Jackie, and Linda Miles, who became Shaniqua.
yep.
But then you also had Matt Morgan
Yep.
come from that one.
He was a fat turd in that too.
Yeah. Although he left because he tore a ligament in his right knee.
Yep.
Season three was Al Snow, Bill DeMott, and Ivory as the trainers. And then that was the one that got us John Hennigan and Matt Capitelli. Oh man, it would have been so great to see Matt Capitelli finally make it to WWE if it wasn't for the brain cancer.
So, a fun fact about the third season, this is a little bit of a deep cut,
And
but
just throw it out there, this match is now underway.
yeah, I just want to talk about this real quick. There was that Asian kid Scott in the third season. He went to T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia. He was on the wrestling team. He was a couple years older than me, but we wrestled them, and I remember him. And in that season, he wears a shirt a bunch of times for the Northern Region Classic, which is, other than the Virginia State Tournament, the second biggest wrestling tournament in the state. And I wrestled in it. My cousin wrestled in it. Scott wrestled in it. So it was just cool to see. That's why that season is my favorite. And I wish Scott had won because it was like a local kind of hometown boy, you know, who I knew but didn't know was on it, which was cool.
But unfortunately, he was let go in episode 7
Yep.
because because of his lack of ability to keep up with the rest of the group.
Yep.
And of course,
Now on the
the interesting thing is that, like, when you look at some of these people, like, yeah, Nidia is probably the more noteworthy person out of season 1 because she had the longer career than Maven did. And obviously, Nowinski had the concussion issue, but Nowinski's doing amazing things these days anyway, so you can't complain about that. Season 2, Matt Morgan ended up having a respectable career in wrestling in general, but Jackie Gato was the one who really kind of was the most successful of that group. So
Yeah.
notice now the most successful ones were Nidia and Jackie Gato. And of course, Jackie ended up getting married to Charlie Haas and everything.
Yep.
Obviously the biggest name to come out of season 3 was John Hennigan because he's still relevant today. Like he
Now,
I
let me ask you this.
Oh
You
no,
said
we got a
Nidia.
commercial break.
You said Nidia was the biggest name to come out of
Well,
season one,
she was the
but.
one who had the bigger run.
But did Nidia eliminate the Undertaker in the Royal Rumble with a
Yes.
dropkick? She did not.
I'm
No,
reinventing.
but
So
you are right.
we we're on
She
we're
must
on
have
our...
eliminated that had the most important storylines.
So everyone,
But
we're on a quick break. We got like 3 seconds left. I apologize. I didn't know Dailymotion was going to do that to us. And now we have another 30-second commercial break from Dailymotion.
she's stupid Daily Motion.
And it doesn't even give me the option to skip. So
But yeah, so on to this match. Thus far, this match has been very good.
oh yeah, it's two guys like really just going at it.
And this was that time in wrestling when it wasn't just one guy on top. Yes, Austin was like the main guy, but like you're watching two of the future. Maybe three biggest guys in the company go at it right now. And you can tell that, like, while they are working professionally in the ring, that they're both working so hard because they want that top spot.
Yeah.
And that's something that I feel like wrestling lacks anymore is like, you know, I feel like you just don't get guys working as hard to be the big dog anymore. You know what I mean?
And now Daily Motion's acting weird. Now buffering. My God. That just tells you what the issues we're having with Awesome Mania right now is all about.
Yeah.
If we don't get this match back in the next minute or two, we're just going to jump right over to the Austin Taker match.
That's fine by me.
I'm going to run on the YouTube real quick. I mean, I have the Austin Taker match lined up already, but I'm going to look at something real quick. That's that. Oh, we can get the full Sunday Night Heat SummerSlam pre-show. Yeah, it is not going to give me the ability to find that match on YouTube between Triple H and Rock. It's giving me like a 59-second thing in the promo video, but that's about it. And the entrances. All right. Well,
Let's just jump over, I guess.
anyways, the result of this match was Triple H defeating The Rock to become the new Intercontinental Champion. Thanks, Daily Motion. So with that, We're going to give everyone a moment to get over to YouTube, look, get to the WWE YouTube page, and look for full match Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Undertaker, WWE title match 1998, or SummerSlam 98. We're going to begin. And with God, I hope there's no commercial breaks, and if there are, we can skip them. And in 3, 2, 1, and away we go. And we're literally right into the match. There's no entrances or anything.
Which is probably good, because an Undertaker entrance takes like 68 and a half minutes. God, this was peak Austin. This was Austin was so good in 98. I mean, Austin was so good from like the years of 96 through like 2001, but still, this was like. And honestly, this was before all the what stuff, which, while I realize it's iconic, got annoying fast.
Well, now you have yeah, because of LA Knight.
Yep.
Oh, I'm done. We have censored the middle fingers. Boo. Boo. How long? Oh, they put this up 3 years ago onto YouTube. Not gonna lie, I was kind of looking forward to watching that Triple H Rock ladder match, though.
Yeah, me too.
As long as we get one watch along match in here, we're good.
Yeah. Are you hearing my audio mic for the matches?
Nope, that's not coming through. God, look at all the press people around the ring.
I know.
Like, but, that.
But remember that at this time, in WWE, this was when like WWE was a global phenomenon. Like everybody.
Well, WWE is still a global phenomenon.
Well, yeah,
but the thing is that you don't see it all around the ring like this.
No, but WWE was like, it was a huge part of pop culture. Like, it was pop culture in 1998, 1997, and 99. Like, it's still very much a part of pop culture then, but like, it wasn't. Like it is, or it isn't like it was back then.
Oh, yeah, obviously. I mean, it's still a global phenomenon regardless, but I see what you're saying, too, at the same point. But still, I remember we were watching, I think it was a Mania, and, like, Shawn Michaels started kicking some of the press people because they're, like, right in the ring. It's like, how is he supposed to work if he has all these people around the ring, you know?
Yeah, I know. Well, and that's the problem, is like a whole fourth of the ring is cut off to like do a lot of spots because of all the camera guys around. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be much harder for them to do like a like dumb
like that right there. That move right there. When Taker dropped Austin on the ropes, you could see the camera guys just like spreading away from that side. Like, they're ducking for cover, thinking that Austin was going to fall on them.
Yeah.
And we got a commercial break for 13 seconds. Thank you, Grey Goose. You suck. But hopefully we won't do a buffer.
Yeah.
All right, we're back. Nothing like, oh yeah, Undertaker's working his back. Here's a commercial for Grey Goose.
Well, dude, that's what YouTube does anymore is they wait till the most important spot in the video and they throw a commercial in there.
Well, I mean, I also like when WWE Network first went to Peacock and then Peacock started throwing in the commercial breaks. It's like, oh yeah, we're gonna do a commercial break during Alexa Bliss's entrance. Excuse me, we want to see Alexa Bliss come out. And then it's like, oh, we're gonna do a commercial break again during Roman Reigns's entrance. Excuse me, you don't do that to our tribal chief, you know? What the hell's wrong with y'all? Like, look at the line. I mean, I understand one of them is like the actual camera guy for WWE, but like, look at all the people there. They're just in a line.
Oh, I know. This had to have sucked for the superstars.
Like, I understand one of them is a legitimate cameraman. He's the one filming the match, and he's one of the cameras that they may go to. But like, all the others don't need to be there. Maybe like one camera person. I mean, digital cameras were becoming a thing at that time, right?
Yeah, they still have the hardwired cameras at this point, I think.
Well, no. I'm talking about like the photo cameras, not the
Ish a little bit. Like I had a I didn't have I don't think cell phone cameras really became a thing until more
I
of
wasn't
a
talking about cell phone cameras. I was talking about just digital cameras.
Okay.
Like
Yeah, dude, it was
where all
dope.
they had to do is just hook up, like take that little memory card out of their camera and put it in the computer and just upload the photos.
I still don't know if those were. They might have been a thing, but they weren't very popular at that point, I don't think. I think film was still kind of the way to go
'Cause
at
then, I
this
mean,
time.
that way you would have had it where it's like, when did digital cam oh yeah, okay, that's what I want. Digital cameras first came out in 1989. Fujifilm released the Fuji X DSX, the first fully digital camera to be commercially released. In 1996, Toshiba's 40 MB flash memory card was adopted for several digital cameras. So there you go.
Nice.
And for whatever reason, Kane has now just come out.
Well, yeah, because wasn't he part of the corporation at this point?
I believe so.
Or he was part of the Ministry of Darkness. Oh no, they weren't a thing yet, the ministry, I don't think. I don't remember. Did we have the ministry at this point?
No, I think ministry is like October.
Okay. Well, that was anticlimactic having Kane come out.
Yeah, because Taker told him to go back. And we're in a break for 18 seconds, but I'm going to be able to skip it. So we're skipping the ads and we're right back to the action. Oh, so that's who's Shaggy, Too Dope, and Violent J are. They're part of Insane Clown Posse.
Oh, you didn't know that?
I know of Insane Clown Posse, but I never really cared.
Bullshit. You're a juggalo.
No.
You drink Faygo just because of the Insane Clown Posse.
I don't even know what the hell that is.
So it's a soda, that's like from around the Michigan area where they're from. They're from Detroit, and during their shows, they basically like shake up bottles and launch them into the crowd. Like they open them up almost. It looks like what Mentos and Coke would look like, but they somehow they're able to launch these bottles of Faygo into the crowd, and the crowd gets all wet and sticky with soda, and somebody gets hit with a bottle. And
That sounds really stupid.
but the Juggalos love it, so I don't know.
Although
To
I
each
find,
their own.
although one thing I do find funny is that apparently when AEW was in Detroit, they gave Insane Clown Posse offered to do like an appearance, and Tony Khan was like, "Nah, I'm good."
Yeah, well.
And apparently, the Insane Clown Posse, I think they tried wanting to do something for SummerSlam, and WWE was like, "Nah, we're good."
They wrestled in WWE for
Well,
a
yeah,
while,
they're
a
part of
little
the
while.
Oddities.
Yeah.
Yeah. They probably just were like, no, we're good. We don't need y'all.
Oh, there's Vladimir.
Oh, the super fan?
Yeah.
That's spine on the pine. That's spine on the pine. And we're in a commercial break, but we got an option to skip it. So we are in 2, 1, skip. Oh, this is a freaking nightmare.
Yeah.
We do apologize, everyone. It's just we
It's
need,
all Peacock's fault.
yeah, we needed to get our August episode out. We're going to try to figure out how to make this work moving forward. So, Matt.
Yeah.
Guess what we finally have in Gaithersburg, Maryland?
What's that?
Sheets.
Yeah, I know. I saw your post.
Guess what I
Sheets.
guess what I picked up from Sheets when I went there on their grand opening day?
What's that?
Campfire s'mores,
Oh,
M&Ms.
interesting.
Yes, I just created a video. Y'all can see that soon.
It's too bad you have the inferior brand of gas station, awesome gas station.
Oh, I don't go there for gas. I go there for their hot chocolate.
I know,
I go to BP for gas.
but what I'm saying is Wawa's better.
No, they aren't.
Yes, they are.
I've been to Wawa. I've never been impressed by them. Sheetz has what I need. I like how Undertaker,
This
I
will
love
be
how,
one of the
hold on. I love how Undertaker right there, he's trying to clear off the Spanish announce table. And he goes to pick up the monitor to throw it off to the side, and it just falls through the hole. And he doesn't bother to remove everything else from the table, which is hilarious. It's like, why is this all still here?
I think both gentlemen are very tired at the moment. We're seeing a lot of resting going on here.
Well, yeah, you're about 14 and a half minutes into this match.
I know this match should maybe only really legitimately be going a minute and a half longer, but
Yeah, this match runtime is 20:52.
Wow, that
Whereas
table
the
doesn't.
ladder match went 25 minutes and 58 seconds.
How did that table not break with their big butts on it?
The only other match that was over 15 minutes long was the European title match between D'Lo
All
Brown
right.
and Val Venis. Yeah, it's because Undertaker dropped the monitor through the hole and didn't take it off. We're gonna blame it on the monitor. God, that actually is some good. You know what? I think it's because of that one monitor that was still in the hole. See how he didn't remove the one monitor? Maybe that's what held it together.
Yeah.
One monitor to hold it all together.
One monitor to rule them, and in the darkness, find them.
And then when Undertaker's fat ass comes flying down, we'll hold the table together. How is that not a rope break? Undertaker's legs were in the ropes. Come on, Earl. Oh, we're in ads again. And we're back. I like the minimalist set they have for SummerSlam. Like I like the cemetery gates.
Yeah, those are pretty sweet. And then, like, the orange glowing light behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I mean, overall, it's not a bad match. It's a pretty good match.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, but like I said, in 98 they did put on a lot of good matches in 98, 99.
Yep.
I love that Luthez press. Who the hell is that guy? The person I'm saying that about, just for everybody, so everybody is aware, is there was a guy who was walking back towards the set, towards the gates. He was standing there. He's not there anymore, but I was like, who the hell is that guy? Because it was distracting from the match. Again, it should be a rope break. Austin's legs are under the ropes.
Come on, Earl. What are you doing, bro?
Yeah. Mike, are you going to go to 40 in Philly?
That's my hope. I need to worry about some other things first before I can really plan April.
Yeah.
I have to worry about my October and November first. Once I take care of those two, then a lot of other things will kind of take
Fall
care of.
into play.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I say once we are start able to plan, we look at night one because night one is always the funner night.
Well, my game plan is that I want to do the SmackDown Hall of Fame night one, night two, and the Raw after
Wow.
Mania. Like, I want to do all four nights just because of, like, that's the bucket list.
Gotcha.
And it's like, what other, and I was kind of explaining this to my dad. It's like, you know, what better Mania to do it for than Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, unless DC gets a mania.
And the only way we get a Mania is if we get a new stadium in DC. And I don't see that. I mean, well, now that the Commanders have new ownership, I can see that being a little bit more plausible at this point now. But the new stadium has to get built first, and it's a matter of
Yeah.
where does it get built. But
That's
yeah, if it's it, but yeah, if it's in
probably gonna be
DC,
here in a while.
but yeah, if it ever came to DC, yeah, I would make that happen. Because then I don't have to worry about like getting a hotel and all that other stuff. You know, it's like, oh, well, I can just metro in. Oh, we just low blowed him.
That was awesome.
That
Well, I
was.
saw this great video of these two kids at their high school graduation this year. When one of the kids got his diploma, his buddy ran up on stage and
Wow.
arched.
That's how they
Arch.
finished the match? Austin
Yeah,
hits the
that's
low blow, then a stunner for the win. Wow. That's an interesting finish. But yeah, I saw that video too of where the kid hit the RKO and then they did the pin 1, 2, 3. That the smoking skull belt? Yeah, it
I
is.
mean,
Yeah, it is.
yes.
It is the smoking skull.
Hit him with it. Hit him with it. Hit him.
Yeah,
Oh,
you can
beautiful
tell because
snake.
of the snakeskin back part.
Hit him. Hit him. I know what's going to happen already, but I'm trying to Jedi mind trick and do what I want to happen. You sissy.
I actually do like that smoking skull belt.
Yeah, that was cool. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I liked the belt that came out after the Brock belt, the Eddie Guerrero belt.
Oh, the then it was originally the Undisputed title, then it just became the WF. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that belt. That's I put that right behind the Winged Eagle for me, but I know a lot of people
For
hated that
me,
belt.
it's the globe, like the big round globe one.
Yeah, the one that they had during this era.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool belt too. That's probably number three for me.
No, but I definitely love, yeah, the Undisputed title belt that you were talking about that Eddie and Brock had and Kurt Angle wore, you know, during the
Oh.
Ruthless Aggression era. And then the Attitude Era Globe Belt. Those are like my top two. All
Yeah.
right. Well, that was that.
Yep. Oh.
That was heavily depressing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not heavily depressing about, you know, the match. Like, I thought the match was good. What was heavily depressing was the fact that we couldn't watch the full pay-per-view with everybody like we had originally planned on doing and had been doing for the last, like, I guess, like, year and a half. I think we've been doing it this way now. And, or maybe even longer. I don't know. As I go to the website to see how long we've been doing it this way.
Yeah.
It, stop it. There we go. Now we've been doing it this way. Oh God, we've been doing this since we've been doing this since June of 2020.
Oh, wow.
The method that we've been doing it. Oh no, that's takeover in your house. That's a discussion one. Hold on. There it is. No, we've been doing this since May of 21.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we've been doing this since May of 21. Because that was when we did WWF In Your House, Beware of Dog. So we've been doing this for like 2.5 years
Yep.
with this method. And unfortunately, Peacock doesn't let you do the share screen stuff anymore, which is a massive disappointment. And so yeah, we're gonna figure out how we're gonna do this. We do plan on having a proper September episode. We may have maybe a match that we do a watch together on from Fall Brawl 98 for WCW, and maybe a match from Breakdown in Your House for WWE. It's just a matter of how do we make it work, and we're gonna have a few weeks to do it. But in the meantime, hope you enjoyed the show. Matt, where can the people find you on social media?
Instagram at the coolest fat kid you know.
And then, of course, you can find Ben on Twitter at @BobTGoldfish, doing the gaming thing on Twitch with his wife Amy and his friend Mr. NNJ Jordan, over at twitch.tv/321_TV. And of course, our sister podcast, Voices from the Grid, you can find that on Twitter at @VFTG_PR. Go ahead, click the link tree to find out where you can find everything for the show there. And of course, for me, you can find me on Twitter at @TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions, Twitch doing the gaming thing at twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75, and of course, everything is on the website at txhthockey.com/X75Productions for everything Awesome Mania and everything else that is done. So with that, excuse me. So with that, we end it with this. I'm not Ben. I can't do the Bill and Ted the way he does it. But guys, gals, and non-aligned pals, in the words of the 16th President Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender honorifics. See, I screwed up like the, see,
Non-gender specific honorific.
honorifics. Yeah, see, I don't do it as good as Ben does. I will admit that. And until next time, we will see you ringside.
Later.